Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with the Bailing brothers, Andy and Nick, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, and really there's only two things to talk about, and that's clearly the return of the Korean Zombie. I'm kidding. It's not the return of the Korean Zombie. The only thing that we need to talk about, and we've been talking about this, guys, all week, is I think what collectively we feel is the most short-sighted decision that the UFC has ever made, probably since its inception. And so for those of you who, I don't know, are into the sport but don't have the internet, I don't know, Conor McGregor was stripped of his featherweight title on Saturday night. And while Dana White yesterday explained, guys, that this was because of the log jam that was in there and that this was the only way to do it and that he was a willing conspirator in this whole thing, I don't believe it for a second. And here's why. One, because without a main event at UFC 206, which is coming up next weekend, they needed to do something. So that something they wanted to do was take 1-3 Anthony Pettis and put him against Max Holloway for an interim belt. But it turns out in MMA rules you can't have two interim belts, so you had to take a belt from Conor McGregor, which I can only assume was Tyron Woodley's belt, and give that to Jose Aldo, who had been knocked out by Conor McGregor a year ago in 13 seconds, and make him the very disputed, undisputed featherweight champion. Do I have that so far?
Yep.
Okay. Which allows McGregor to defend the belt at 155 that he took from Eddie Alvarez, but removes his 14-day reign as the only man in UFC history to hold two belts at the same time.
Right, yep.
Got it. Okay.
We're in.
So everybody's all caught up, but here we are. Dana White says that it's what he had to do. Is that do you believe? First of all, are you cool if you would have stripped him for any other reason other than this insanity?
Well, I thought it would come at some point. Just based on, you know, how many times he wants to fight, and if he's saying he's going to, you know, when people say, I'm going to take some time off, and he has a kid coming, like, how is he going to be able to fight at a pace to defend two belts? So it doesn't surprise me that it happened. It's just, it wasn't planned on having that fight be an interim fight 2 weeks ago.
Sure.
So that was the thing that came, you know, caught me off guard.
And, Nick, I know you and I talked about this. It feels as if, one, I don't think Conor was a willing participant in this. And, two, I know we have had this conversation off the air, so we'll have it on the air. Like, what stops Conor from walking around and going, why would you watch this division? None of these guys beat me. They were handed the belt. This guy, you know, if Anthony wins on Saturday night, you have a 1-3 fighter who beat Charles Oliveira, who I was making fun of earlier, right? In his last four fights, has missed weight or lost or both in all of them. So at featherweight, he's not really a contender. So you beat a non-contender at featherweight to then be an interim championship fight against Max Holloway. They wanted it to be, as Dana said yesterday, they wanted it to be Max and Jose, but turns out Jose, as you astutely pointed out, is still in contract disputes, although being the undisputed featherweight champion.
Yeah, the last time that we saw him in the media, he was talking about becoming a soccer player.
Yes.
So that's the thing is, if he's getting some sort of silence money, or, you know, not even money from it, but just, hey, you're picking fights, and right now you're picking them at 170 pounds, so why don't you, you know, leave the little guys alone at this point in
right.
the game? I don't see him even really, like, bothering in that division until he's ready to bother in that division. It makes sense again. If he misses something in a different weight class or, you know, any of his other activities that he's in right now. So I don't see him, like, picking on them until it's time, and then he's going to just open the floodgates. I think all this is ammo for him for when he wants to go back down and play that game.
But I also have a little bit of an issue in the way in which Dana explained this yesterday, Andy, in that I let Conor fight Nate Diaz, which is revisionist history because RDA was injured, so therefore the fight couldn't happen, and Conor saved that by fighting Nate Diaz and lost. So then I let Conor fight Nate Diaz again. Oh, yeah, was the second highest pay-per-view of the year that Conor McGregor was on. The three that he did were the highest of the year, right? So you let him do that, but once again, he saved that event. And then fast forward to UFC 204, where he ends up beating Alvarez and walking away with the strap, becoming of the three of the year that were the highest, they were all his. So I have a, I take a little bit of offense to the fact that you didn't let him do anything. He essentially was the draw of the year.
Yeah, I mean, that had to happen again, that second fight. I mean, he did say he wanted it, McGregor did, but they were going to let him have that fight again because they wanted money. They were in the process of negotiating, selling. Like, why not have another awesome pay-per-view under your under the year and talk to the potential buyers about, oh, we have this guy, McGregor. He just has this, you know, thing going on with Nate Diaz. He let him, if he wants to say it like that, because Conor said that that was the only person he was going to fight, for one thing, and he gave it to him. So he twists words a lot to make it sound like he is maybe more so for the whatever the fighters want.
Right, and this week, and we'll get to this in a second, right? Like, this week, more than any other, you sort of want to sound like you're doing what the fighters want, because now that there's a fighters union, you probably need to start doing what the fighters want.
I still find it interesting in the UFC and MMA in general is that the media, us, we take a stance on this thing as we're interested in the finances, we're interested in pay-per-view buys, we're still interested in who's going to be watching it. That's a conversation that's spoken about a lot in this. Like, the fans themselves have interest in what those buys were and what the viewership was. And I find that interesting because this thing seems short-sighted from a belt standpoint and things like that, but I'm almost insulted from a fan standpoint of, like, do you think you're going to get buys out of making this happen? Like, are you trying to save this card? Like, we've done it before. Dump it from a pay-per-view to a Fox Sports 1 card.
Yeah, I don't think they want to do that. I mean, they've had kind of a, and I'm not defending them. You know, right, that I'm not an apologist for things that are dumb, and I find this to be totally dumb because of what you just said. No one should or is going to give $60 to Max Holloway or Anthony Pettis to watch them fight for a fake belt of two fake belts that apparently merged like a Voltron to become the featherweight championship that no one actually earned.
Right.
No one's going to do that. You know, however, they've had clearly a bad week. They had to move the Anaheim card to the Barclays Center, push the Anaheim card all the way to August of 2017. So there's some cards moving around that I think would make them have a panic attack, Ronda Rousey style, right? If they had to take that and put it as a Fox Sports 1 card. Although, you're not wrong, it is a Fox Sports 1 card, which is why you shouldn't pay $60 for it next weekend.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, if the fight would have dropped off and they would have just said, hey, this is a good fight and we're going to make this a title contender fight and, you know, we're going to put Cerrone as the headliner or something like that,
yeah,
just something to make it. I mean, Andy and I will buy almost every card. It doesn't matter. This one is so insulting that I almost don't want to buy it just because they're trying to make it so contrived.
Well, and there's, you know, I'm pulling it up right now just to make sure I have all of the fights in front of me, but, like, I was saying this from the get-go with Ken prior to what's the other fight that's on here?
Tim Kennedy?
Yeah, prior to the Tim Kennedy fight, right, which was a carryover from the last pay-per-view where
Rashad
couldn't make it.
Yep.
You know, you're like, okay, Tim Kennedy and Rashad are on this card. Then you had, Matt Brown.
And Cowboy.
Yeah, and Cowboy was on that card. And you're like, okay, now you're starting to build this thing. Because prior to that, it was like one of the worst cards of the year.
Oh, for sure.
And none of this saves you from the fact that it's still one of the worst cards of the year as far as like any sort of real deal meaning behind it. I mean, now you've got Kennedy and Gastelum, if Gastelum can make weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's 885, but it's Gastelum, so like relax. But there's obviously implications if Matt Brown and Cerrone fight, but the Pettis Max Holloway thing makes zero sense other than they were already on the card, so you're going to make them the number one contender, but they are not. Look at the rankings, look at the body of work, like they are not. Max Holloway, perhaps.
Yeah, but I saw the promotion for it yesterday on Facebook on an ad from the UFC, and it showed Showtime kicking Henderson in the face off the cage, though.
Yeah, I remember that year too. You know, and then you know, and then now you've got the Madden curse of MMA, which is that Wheaties box, because he was never the same after that Wheaties. The Wheaties box just really did a number on his career. When you look at what Conor has done for this sport this year, it just seems like, I totally agree with you. You can absolutely strip him. He's gone. He's having a kid. We're going to strip him in January. Like, he went through 2016 as a two-division champ. He can't keep up the pace. We love what he does for the sport. However, we need to move on. And with that, it's Max Holloway, Jose Aldo, Super Bowl weekend to unify the title with whoever walks out of it is the featherweight champion. Now somebody's earned something. But that's not what they did, right? They took these two guys, one of which absolutely does not deserve it. I don't care what his name is. He hasn't done anything at featherweight that makes it so that Pettis jumps ahead of Lamas or any of those guys that you could have put in this fight if that's what you were going to do to make it another number one contender's match. You put Pettis against Holloway because it's the next logical step after beating Charles Oliveira. You did not put that, as you said, leading up to this. This was an interesting fight that I wanted to watch, but you made that fight because it was the next logical step up the ladder. It was not the top of the ladder for Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, there's when they made it the title fight, and you know, I said that to you. It was a fight that I was excited to watch, and it was a good fight to have on the card when there was the main event that was supposed to happen, and I was looking forward to watching it. But now I feel like it's just like it got jammed on us. Like now this is a title fight that you want to, you can't miss this fight. I'm like, well, I think I might miss it.
Well, and you've got, you know, you've got two in a row, and we'll talk about it here in a second. You've got two in a row in the fact that you've got this weekend, you've got DJ against Tim Elliott. Tim Elliott, who was kicked out of the UFC, won three in a row and won tough and is back in the UFC fighting against...
It was just last year. I actually have watched people sit out longer that are actively on the roster.
Sure.
Than he's been gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was gone last year. He's back. He's fighting for the title. Zero chance that he beats Demetrius, like, absolutely zero chance that he beats Demetrius Johnson.
The only thing I saw, like, at the stare down, and I was like, oh, well, he's taller.
He was looking down, and, like, he was, you know, it just, you've got these two events in a row, and no offense to DJ, if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know that I will say without hedge, I mean, I was going to say that McGregor's clearly the pound-for-pound best because he was a two-division champion, but he's clearly not, so he's terrible. He goes back down to 10. But, you know, it's Johanna and DJ are right up there, and McGregor's in the mix because of what he's done in the organization. But it's hard to deny how brilliant DJ is. He's just not a draw, which is why he's not on pay-per-view. And so you've got that followed up by this insane card next weekend where they want you to give $60. And you're in the middle of the holidays, you're leading up to this Ronda Rousey thing, which is way more interesting because in between running away from her opponent and going and crying in the locker room, we're trying to figure out what happens if she loses that fight, what happens if she wins that fight, what is going to happen there. And I don't know that you needed to save this one. I don't think they were going to put it on Fox Sports 1, but I just think this is a dumb reason to take your number one draw, regardless of how long he's going to be gone. Strip him of the belt so that Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis have something to do a week from Saturday.
Yeah, and I think one of the main things with this card too is, you know, it's in Toronto, so obviously it has, like, the fights in Canada have they have good attendance, and if at the time they were hopeful to potentially get GSP on this card at one point,
said his lawyers say that he's got enough ammunition to get out of that whole thing altogether. So,
yeah.
So we'll see how that works.
But, you know, now we're having this card, I bet there's not going to be great attendance at this event.
Well, and you didn't have it last weekend with the Brunson fight. You know, they were giving refunds on Saturday to that fight. So you've got three in a row, and that's not to say that the Whitaker-Brunson fight wasn't interesting. I mean, Brunson looked amazing, right? And that was a fun round. Mm-hmm. But you're not bringing in the eyeballs. This is not the... When we talk a lot about when will the UFC become the NFL or those sorts of silly things that we say as MMA fans, you know, this isn't the same as people tuning in on a Sunday afternoon to watch whatever thing is shoved down their throat on Fox because of the blackouts or whatever team that's available if you don't buy the Sunday ticket, right? More people watch
those football games than watch Whitaker and Brunson fight on Saturday night, right? This sport hasn't reached that level. But they have a singular guy who is at that level in Conor McGregor that they just made look sort of silly after he made history for 13 days and 12 hours.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's just one of those things where you built this thing, and you know, if it was telling that he wasn't going to give him that second belt in the cage to begin with, and they had to go grab Woodley's, they didn't ever want that to happen. They didn't want him to have that two belt control because there's leverage in who he is at the time for his name. There's leverage that he holds up two belts at the same time, which holds up two divisions. So he's in control of the lower half of your thing. Because I mean, you take DJ out of the mix, and you know you're starting to look at some troubles there. So it's just one of those things that you really have to think. Well, I mean, you opened the show with this whole thing. This was so incredibly short-sighted that it's tough to even try to justify it while we're dissecting it for 15 minutes.
Well, I just don't know you're going to be able to justify it in any way, shape, or form, even though, which is the weird part about this, right? Because even though they're right to do it, they're just not right to do it for this silly reason, to save this silly card and make the whole division look stupid. If Jose is not ready to go, you don't do it.
Oh, if I saw this in 3 months from now and it was Max Holloway versus Jose Aldo for the for a championship belt and it was going to be the undisputed, I wouldn't have even questioned it one bit. I would have said, "Yep, that's probably about the time frame that I would have figured they were going to do that if he wasn't going to come back and defend it at that time." Once Conor was ready to announce his next fight, whatever division he wasn't in, I would have been like, "Oh, yep, that one's gone.
Sure,
no big deal."
And again, fine with that, right? He made history, but then you just made it look silly because you just randomly picked three people to put into the mix to make it, you know, I showed you that meme yesterday where it's Conor pounding Jose in the head saying, "Wake up, Jose, I've got to give you your belt back," as Dana said, "You're crying about it." That's the stuff that I anticipate happening sooner than later when Conor gets back in the mix to be like, "I don't care who has that belt, they're not the champion."
Right.
"I don't care because they didn't beat me, they took it from me while I was having a kid." Right, and gave it to another kid who was whining about it. Which brings us to the other big news this week. We now have a fighters organization led by Bjorn Rebney, which I don't know that I would ever say that out loud. I know you and I were, you know, joking yesterday that this is the Shawshank Redemption version of MMA, where Bjorn is trying to make up for all of his sins as a promoter to now, you know, fight for the little guy and make sure that the fighters are taken care of. GSP, a huge part of this. Tim Kennedy involved with this. Donald Cerrone involved with this. Cain Velasquez involved in this. What do you guys think will be, in the next 6 months, what will this look like, do you think, as far as a fighters organization? Like, will this thing get legs? Will it get, no disrespect to the names that I just said, but will it get people with a lot on the line, meaning people who own belts in the UFC, to join this thing?
I don't see in 6 months very much changing. I see this a year or 2 years. The guys that are in this right now, again, no offense to anybody in there, but they're not the draw. They're not the one name. They don't have that person, but they are a good meat of your, you know, pay-per-view card. They're the person that's the co-main event. That's where those guys are in their careers right now. And I mean, Cain Velasquez, he's a main event fighter. He's one of the best heavyweight that's been around. I mean, however you want to identify him. Right now, he's not fighting in headlining pay-per-views for championship fights. And
no, but
and
his,
drawing
his,
at the
his
same time.
But his sparring partner is, and I wonder, is he going to join, right? Is Cormier going to be a part of this thing? Out for 4 months with surgery again. You know, so we don't get to see the lightweight belt defended until, you know, the non-interim version, right? We don't get to see that defended until, what will that be, May, right? Maybe the same card that Connor's on. Do you think he joins that? I mean, you know, what does that thing flesh out to be when you've got Kane, who's, I mean, it would be like having one of you guys join a union and the other one not join, as far as their relationship goes.
Well, that's a question some of the stuff I've been reading after that press conference was when they were calling it an association or a union, the differences between being like independent contractors and being employees and all that stuff, and them calling themselves an association. So if you look at the other sports like the NHLPA and NFL and Major League Baseball and all those, the the people, they have the leaders of it, and in those too, guys that are active players and is the players president or whatever they call it of each of those unions.
Sure. Yep.
So having a core group, the biggest thing I saw reading stuff online after that was everybody that worked with Bjorn in any organization. Like, it was really funny to me seeing like people, other fighters, like talking about him. It was like Andre Arlovsky was like, what are you guys doing there? It was like on somebody else's Instagram.
Right.
Like, it was making me laugh. Like, why is he here? How did he sneak in? How did he get a t-shirt?
Sure. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The thing like I kind of took out of that is like a lot of the people like the direction. They didn't like that one guy standing on the left end of the row.
Yeah. And, and that'll be interesting to see how that fleshes out because, like I, you know, like Nick and I were talking about, right? Is he in there really because he wants to make up for all of the stuff that he did while he was a promoter, or is there something more nefarious involved in that? I don't mean that in like evil genius, rub your hands together, take over the world kind of way, but you know, is there another play in there? They said on Wednesday they hadn't spoken to the UFC yet, which I found to be really weird that they're just going to start an association and pray it all works out. But as you know, Nick, you and I were talking this week prior to the broadcast. Like Ari deals with SAG all the time, so he understands the diva mentality of what would happen in that universe, right? Like
right.
I have these requirements, and I'm in no way, shape, or form comparing what The Rock needs to do on the set of a movie, Fast 29, versus what Tim Kennedy needs to do in order to fight Calvin Gastelum at 612 pounds, right? Like, those are two very different things that you need to prepare for. However, what I mean is he understands having somebody in between, an arbitrator at best, working on behalf of the fighters.
It's going to be individual fighters joining, but the back end is going to be interesting on how they start joining. You have TJ Dillashaw, Muscle Farm.
I forgot DJ. Yeah, Dillashaw was in there.
Yeah, you have Cerrone at Greg Jackson.
Yep.
And everybody's coming from a reputable camp, a big camp that's standing up there right
AKA,
now.
AKA, all that stuff, yeah.
So is it going to start from the camps? Is it going to say, well, Greg Jackson fighters aren't going to be doing that until they're part of this association? You don't train with us unless you're part of this association. Is it going to come from management? So you have guys that are grouped in management that might be all over the country that are managed by the same person. And they're saying, well, when we represent and we negotiate contracts, we bring in this third party to help us out. Or is it going to be individual names like the Conor McGregor, a Ronda Rousey? I wish I had more names to just throw off the top of my head that can do numbers like that, but we just don't have that in the current.
But I would say orders. I would say if Jones, Rousey, or McGregor join this thing, it's a thing,
right?
It's going to be hard for them to negotiate around one of those three, you know.
The thing that the representatives in it right now, if they walk away and go to, they can't. I mean, they're under contract, but if like them leaving the UFC is a hurtful. Right, like they need those people to fill those main event cards, those co-main event cards, and those headliners. You know, they are those people, whether we call them a draw or a celebrity or not. What's going to be interesting is seeing the person who's on the prelim on Fight Pass thinking that they need to get into this because they don't have that kind of leverage, and they're just going to get eaten up, and they're never going to get off Fight Pass because of that.
And yes, if we're doing it on an individual basis, but if whole gyms are joining, I think that's probably or whole management teams are joining. Because, you know, Bjorn has a connection to CAA, which is obviously a competitor of WME. So there's, you know, there's some tension there. This whole thing will be really interesting how it fleshes out. But as I said earlier, George St. Pierre this morning was saying, like, they've got very strong indications that he is actually a free agent, which this association with him ending up someplace that isn't called the UFC could make for a really interesting beginning of 2017. And I told you, Nick, yesterday that I really felt that somewhere, you know, out in the ether, that the Fertittas saw all of this coming and went, peace out, son, somebody else deal with this insanity, right?
Right.
You know, and Dana obviously made his money on the sale so he could leave anytime he wants to, but in for a penny, in for a pound, I guess? I don't know. But this will be an interesting first half of the year.
Yeah, and I think they're going to be able to get some, one of the ways to get people on board, and it's one of the first things I read, and I don't know if this the UFC number is exact or what the source was that I read it, But they said that 8% of the revenue goes to the fighters, and they want it to be more in line with NFLPA, which is 55% go to the players in the NFL. That's a huge gap. So if you go to a guy that's, like Nick said, on a fight pass prelim, it was like, hey, we're trying to get from 8% to 55%. So instead of you getting 8 or 12, you know, to fight, maybe you'll get 50. And then you're like, that sounds good to me. I'm on board.
Sure. And they'll have to navigate through the scalability of that, because that doesn't make any sense to me, to go from $8,000 to $50,000 to watch, no offense to the two of you, like one of you in your first UFC fight for 50 grand. It seems silly. But this could be more than just money in what they help them with.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
What Dillashaw was talking about is like, when this is over, when I'm out of contract, I'm back on my own insurance.
Yeah, right.
And I don't have a way to make revenue. And I like all of it, because, of course, as a fighter, if you're not Conor McGregor, if you're not John Jones, if you're not Ronda Rousey, who has extracurricular things happening, there are a lot of fighters that have extracurricular things. I'm just picking on the three big ones.
Right.
But if you're not one of those guys, when the thing ends, the thing ends.
Yeah.
And then what do you do? Because there's not a 401k.
Right.
There's not a stock option at this point. You know, Conor's fighting for his own, but as you listened last week, Ken screamed at me about that insane idea and wait till he retires that he gets ownership in the organization. He may be rethinking that after an association is coming their way. But long story short, there really isn't a retirement plan for fighters unless you've got other irons in the fire.
Right, and that's what GSP touched on. He goes, I'm one of the very few people that are, like, pretty wealthy from fighting, that I don't have to fight again if I don't want to. And so I think that he's coming in. I mean, he's kept his name. Is he fighting? Is he not fighting? Is he in the UFC? Is he released? Like, all this stuff. He stays very much in the news, in the industry right now. But having him be, you know, at one time the biggest draw, the biggest pay-per-view draw, but just back 3 years ago or so, putting him in position and saying, like, I'm making the money here, and I am, you know, I'm going to live a good life. I think there'll be younger fighters who will want to follow that.
Sure, and it'll be interesting if they're able to do that. All right, we've got a couple minutes left before we end this for a Friday. Really quickly, I want to touch on the fact that I mentioned earlier that Korean Zombie is back. He is, in fact, back. He's going to be fighting Dennis Bermudez on Super Bowl weekend, which is very exciting. If you remember, as part of his citizenship, he had to go into the military for 2 years. That is now over. It gives him time to get a camp in and get back in Super Bowl. Super interested to see what happens, especially since that whole division, you know, featherweight division is kind of in flux, and it'll be interesting to see what he looks like in Super Bowl weekend. I'm actually very excited to have him back. If Conor's going to be out of the picture there, as a huge Korean Zombie fan, I'm excited to see what happens.
Well, there. I'm pretty sure, I just have to ask you, the very first time I met you, or maybe I didn't even meet you, maybe it was just I saw you, I think you had a Korean Zombie t-shirt.
I do,
on.
In do, fact.
Do you still have that ready
for
retirement?
Yes, I do. It was sitting in a closet for 2 years in memoriam of Korean Zombie being gone. I'm not ready to wear it again.
All right.
The other thing is, obviously, there's an event this weekend. Not a lot to talk about, guys, and we've only got a couple minutes, so we'll just kind of do a round-robin thing. Co-main event is going to be Cejudo and
Benavidez.
Your thoughts on that fight?
I'm interested to see how Cejudo comes back after losing, you know, that last fight against DJ. So,
but everybody loses DJ,
I know.
So, like, it's not, to me, it doesn't seem like it's the same thing.
Yeah,
you know? Like,
right.
You go into the wood chipper and you come out the same person because everybody loses to him.
Well, yeah. Well, then it's like Benavidez is like, I think I, you know, deserve another shot at him.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. If I'm going to pick, I think Benavidez is going to win that fight.
I'll take Cejudo on that one.
I'm with you. I'm going to take Cejudo on that. I just think I like Cejudo, and I think Cejudo's that guy. Not that I want to fight with you, Andy, about this, but
no.
I think Cejudo's one of those guys that's at pre-2008 Clay Guida level, right? Like, he's a gatekeeper. You got to get by him to get to DJ, and I think he's going to prove that on Saturday. Now, I could be totally wrong, but I got a feeling about him that he's going to be that guy. We'll never beat DJ ever, but we'll stop a lot of dudes from getting to DJ. And then that leads us to the main event, which I'm sure I know how this is going to end up, but the lovely Tim Elliott, after a year-long vacation from the UFC, taking on Demetrius Johnson after his win at Tough 24. Andy, your thoughts?
Well, he looks different. He cut his hair and he doesn't have a beard, so maybe people won't know who he is.
Right.
Because Nick and I were talking.
Is that
and,
the idea? Like, yeah. Comes back in.
I said, you know, he's Tim Elliott won that fight, so you know that's who he's fighting. And I was like, do you remember he just fought like last year? So we pulled up. I pulled up a photo. I was like, "Well, this is what he looked like last time he fought in the UFC, and now this is what he looks like now." So maybe he's going in as a new identity. But yeah,
does that mean you're picking him?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
He has a new gimmick. Right. Cactus Jack is coming out. He has a new nickname.
Yes, he's come out as Cactus Jack. If he loses on Saturday night, he will be Socko and Mankind. The next time he comes out, yeah, I like where your head's at.
Yeah.
So you're picking him, then?
Yeah, of course.
Clearly. So, yeah, that is this weekend. You can catch that free fight. Next weekend is a pay fight, but pretend it's not happening and save that $60 for December 30th, because believe me when I tell you, regardless of the fight, the week leading up is going to be the most interesting week in MMA history. I promise you that, because there's just something up with Ronda right now, and I cannot wait to see what happens that week.
Well, I would say the biggest thing that I would be worried about is you come back and you lose again. Then what? Then your two fight losing streak and not really that good of an actress?
I said this 6 months ago when she disappeared and stopped talking to people. She loses the second fight, it's over. She's retiring. That's the end of Ronda Rousey, which is okay.
Yeah.
I would say for another time, I'd love to sit down with you guys and do a much longer discussion. Maybe we could do this closer to the fight. But I think from a role model standpoint, all the media that she's been able to do, it's kind of terrible that that's how she would act. However, if you lose twice in a row, the division has passed you by. Mm-hmm. Demetrius Johnson, we'll circle this back and end the show. Demetrius Johnson has been able to stay ahead of the competition at his weight class. So, you know, the fighters at his division have not evolved in a way that they're going to pass him by. In the same way that I if you follow Diz on Twitter, at TalkMMA, he and I are in agreement that the light heavyweight division hasn't evolved yet either. So Jones is just waiting for whoever is keeping his belt warm to go take it back. Those two guys are in the same position. I think in every other weight class, there's some flux there, as you've seen. With Conor McGregor floating all over the place and being spoiler to everyone, he's clearly the outlier. My point in saying all this is that it appears as if the women's division, the original women's division at 135, has finally evolved in a way, if she ends up losing on December 30th, has evolved in a way that she was not able to keep up with. She was a pioneer. She did amazing work for the sport and what women can do in MMA, but that just might be a thing. So we'll see. All right, as always, you can follow everything along on Twitter and Facebook, at Wow Show. Andy, Nick, have a great weekend.
You too.